Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. Today, I'll be looking at imposter syndrome. Now, I don't know whether those words resonate with you, but in modern times, imposter syndrome has become slightly overused, I think, as a means of getting across the fact that someone is either faking it or doesn't quite have the minerals to live up to the role that they're in. And it can go from anything from parenting to your job to matching people's expectations of you at the pub quiz or whatever. So I thought it would be useful to look at it in terms of where the actual moniker comes from, imposter syndrome, and what the origins of it are, and also what we can do to calm it down. And also, the other thing that popped into my mind is, what if you really are an imposter? You know, there's always that possibility as well, which I'd like to explore. So, where does imposter syndrome come from? Well, it all starts in 1978 with a study by Pauline Rose Clance and Suzanne Imes. And the actual title of the paper is called The Imposter Phenomenon in High Achieving Women: Dynamics and Therapeutic Intervention. So the first thing you'll notice is that the study was only around women, and it didn't really have a lot of statistical power. It was more qualitative in some ways. So they had interviewed and treated, using psychotherapy, 150 women, and they were really looking at patterns that were falling out of those sessions in terms of the approaches that worked depending on how women presented. It's interesting the language they use in the paper, actually, and in the abstract, which you'll be able to see in the show notes, they talk about intellectual phoniness. So they say that imposter phenomenon is really about an internal experience. So it's something that's in the mind of these women who, you know, for whatever reason, feel that they are imposters. And they felt that there were lots of factors, including the stereotyping of female roles in society. And one theme came up again and again, this feeling that I'm not good enough, or, oh, surely there was some mistake, you know, I'm not good enough to be here. And, you know, that can manifest in so many ways, in symptoms of anxiety or depression or a lack of self-confidence or frustration. And the other thing was that they found that women were much more likely to attribute their success to something external, like luck, for example, whereas men were much more likely to attribute their success to a quality that was kind of, you know, inherent in themselves, that, you know, they were responsible for their success. Really interesting. And I guess the other thing is that what they found in this group of women is that they were all different. There wasn't one particular pattern. So often, you know, the end result was this imposter phenomenon, in that they really felt that they were imposters. But the root cause, if you like, was different. So, for example, in some families, if a child, you know, is brought up and told that they're absolutely brilliant at everything and they can achieve anything, when you feel that you can't achieve what you feel that you should achieve, that can also bring on imposter syndrome. So you might think it's a positive thing, bringing up a child saying that, oh, you can do anything you like. But actually, if the child themselves is sort of feeling that, you know, they can't meet expectations, then there's a mismatch there. There's a disconnect. And that also leads to this feeling of being an imposter. Now, I really want to look more closely at different groups that you find that fall into this category of imposter syndrome, because I think it could be quite helpful. And certainly when I look through them, I can identify myself and friends and family members that fall into one of those. But just before I do that, I think it's worth just taking a moment to realise that the statistic on this is that up to 70% of all people have feelings like this. So that means most people on the planet at some point get a feeling that they are an imposter. And I have to say, you know, as a GP, I'm so lucky I get to treat people from all walks of life. And it is something that's really common. It comes up again and again in consultations, like, you know, just in the sort of, in a passing phrase, it might be like, you know, maybe I'm not as good a dad as I could be, or maybe I'm, you know, I don't know whether I'm good enough to do my job and there's a lot of pressure on me. All of these things are imposter syndrome in different guises. And I can also tell you that of the people that I've met who I think are incredibly, in inverted commas, successful or at the top of their game or in the top of their field, all of those sort of cliches, also have imposter syndrome. Almost all of them are racked with, I wouldn't say insecurity, but there is an element of self-doubt. So in a way, I take comfort from that, because I think, hey, you know, this is not that uncommon. Okay, so who are the people that struggle with imposter syndrome? Are there different types of people? Well, Dr. Valerie Young is deemed a world expert in this area. And actually, she was, by background, someone who was training in education. And actually, while she was into her graduate program, she heard the study by Clance and Imes read out by a fellow student. And it sparked something in her brain, and she spent the rest of her career looking at imposter syndrome and all of the subtypes of people that struggle with it and what you can do about it. So this for me is really interesting. So if we look at the different groups of people that are prone to imposter syndrome, Dr. Young actually starts with something called a rule book exercise, which is a kind of assumption about what's going on in the minds of these people. So there are some common themes. And one of the things that she did with a whole host of different professionals from all sorts of backgrounds is this exercise based around competence. And this is so clever, this. So what she says is that, you know, this is the internal dialogue that's going on in the heads of a lot of these people. So if I were really intelligent, capable and competent, then I should know everything in my field. I should get it right first time. I should excel in everything I do. I'd always have the answers. I'd always understand what I'm reading. I'd always feel confident. I'd never make a mistake. I'd never be confused, and I'd never need help. Now, that just reading that list sounds so unrealistic, but believe it or not, a lot of people are programmed like that, particularly people who are very driven or very successful in their field. So what then came out of that rules exercise, as Dr. Young calls it, were five different competence types. And these are the ones that really ring true to me when I think about people I know, myself. It's almost uncanny. So I'm just going to go through them, and I want you to just have a think about whether any of them seem to resonate with you. So the first one is the perfectionist. So the perfectionist is really someone whose focus is on how something is done, and that includes how the work is sort of conducted and how it turns out. And the problem with the perfectionist is that any minor flaw is a bit of a disaster, and that means you failed, and that leads to shame. So I know a lot of people like that. I can picture them now. So the second competence type is called the expert. And this is really a knowledge version of the perfectionist, where it's all about what and how much you know or how much you can do. And because, of course, you're expected to know and do everything, any kind of minor kind of lack of knowledge means that you failed. So we've got the perfectionist and the expert. Next up is the soloist. And this is really about who does the job, who gets the job done, and who gets credited for the achievement. And, you know, because, you know, if you're the soloist, because you think you need to do all the figuring out and everything on your own, and if you, you know, it means that if you've asked for help, then that's a sign of failure. So a lot of people feel that they need to do everything absolutely alone in order to validate themselves. You know, otherwise they feel like they failed. Interesting, eh? So the one after the soloist is called the natural genius. And the natural genius is really, you know, about how and when things happen, but also in terms of ease and speed. So, you know, it's about picking things up quickly and being a natural at something, rather than having to struggle to master something. This is a really interesting one, and I think this one really sort of strikes home with me, because for many years, anyone who knows me will know that if I can pick something up very quickly, I'm really happy, you know, and that goes for, you know, sports or music or whatever, anything that takes a bit of effort. Well, certainly when I was younger, I used to just give up on, because I just thought, well, I can't do this, you know, I'm a failure. And of course, as we now know, all the research shows that actually that's just not the case. You know, everything, almost everything can be taught, and practice makes perfect, you know. So you're not born, you know, a Wimbledon champion. You have to work at it. And so, yeah, really interesting that one for me, because I think that natural, you know, that talent versus hard work argument comes into that. And yeah, basically talent is nothing without hard work. So what's next? So the next one is called the superwoman or superman or super student. And this is all about how many roles you can juggle and be really good at, you know, excel in. And that falling short in any of your roles, you know, whether it's as a partner or a friend or a parent or in your work, you know, all of them lead to feelings of shame. I don't know how many of you feel that that in some way is just a reflection of modern life. Something to think about. So that's the sort of summary of the categories of the competence types that tend to feel imposter syndrome. Perfectionist, expert, soloist, natural genius, superwoman or superman or super student. I just want to pause for a second there, and let's just reflect on those and just think about ourselves and how many of those sound familiar. And then perhaps just thinking about how many of those actually, you know, going through those categories, you know, makes you possibly realize that they're flaws and that we are all flawed in some way. But the good news is that actually there are things that we can do about it. So the first thing, like I said before, is that you're not alone. This is extremely common. And if and when those things occur or you get those kind of thoughts, then the first thing to do is to remind yourself that you're not alone and that actually this is very common. The second thing is about changing your mindset. It's really difficult when you feel like an imposter to not feel like that unless you change the way that you think. And what Valerie Young says is that actually, you know, the only difference between imposters or people who struggle with imposter syndrome and those that don't is that they think differently. So you've got to sort of learn to think like the people that don't feel like they're imposters. And that involves really a CBT type technique called reframing. And reframing is really just a different way of looking at things. So, for example, rather than focusing on things that you're not so good at, why don't you focus on the things that you are good at? Or you may think that you never say enough in meetings and that you're very quiet, but your colleagues might think that whatever you say has a tremendous amount of value and that you only speak when you have something valuable to add. You know, so it's about kind of taking the alternate view and changing the narrative. Because often these negative thought patterns, the ones that sort of lead to that feeling of imposter syndrome, are quite ingrained. They've been there for years. So you have to almost override that by saying the opposite or something that's different. So often they're sentences that you might think in your head that start with, I'm no good at dot, 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 or I'm bad at dot, dot, dot. And you'll often find if you search back in your mind, those things have been stuck on you from childhood or by friends as a joke at school or whatever. And there's no real validity to them. And you'll only be able to kind of give those things a go that you've shut off in your brain if you're able to accept that you're not going to get them right first time and you can accept that and that you're comfortable with that. And it's just so interesting, this, because I think so much anxiety stems from imposter syndrome in life. I really, really do. I'm not just talking about medics. I'm talking about patients that come in to see me. I mean, it is there in the background, you know, and it's tied into all sorts of things like self-confidence, self-esteem, and just how you feel about yourself. So yes, I think, you know, in summary, a lot of this is about being compassionate to yourself, allowing yourself the chance to fail, and knowing that it's not the end of the world. Right at the beginning, I said, what about the people that, you know, are overconfident and actually don't have imposter syndrome because they are actually imposters or they're just overconfident? Well, you know, there are always going to be narcissistic people that think they're better than they are at things, and they put others at risk potentially. And you've got to watch out for those people. I have worked with a character like this, and actually it's quite dangerous because they can't tell the difference between when they're good at something and when they're not, and they tend to just blag that they can do everything not good. Okay, so I've gone on long enough, I think. So that was imposter syndrome. I hope that's given you a little bit of insight into what it is. Perhaps you relate to it yourself. I'd love to hear your experiences on this, because I think it's actually so prevalent. We need to talk about it more. There are some great links on the show notes, which I hope you'll find interesting, including to the original study. And what I'm going to do this week is, every time I feel like I'm feeling that imposter feeling, I'm going to stop and actually ask myself a couple of questions. Number one, where do I have proof that I'm an imposter? And number two, what resources or what things would I need in order not to be an imposter? And I think that's a great place to start, because most of us will realise very quickly that it's much ado about nothing. Okay, and with that, I'm going to sign off. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you once more. I really hope you're enjoying the podcast and the whole series. Please do let me know what you think. I'd love to hear from you. Also, if you've got any topic suggestions, I'm very open to that. I'm going to leave you with one of my favourite quotes on imposter syndrome by the amazing poet and wordsmith Maya Angelou. And it's this. I've written 11 books, but each time I think, uh-oh, they're going to find out now. And I think that sums things up really nicely. Do take care.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.